You can't gamble with people's properties. You can't gamble with people's expectations. You know, you have to have a calculated approach to everything. If you're putting all your money in it, you're going to get stressed. You're going to start pushing. You're going to be aggressive in your sales. You're just going to be, you know, pushing people to sign on. And no one's going to want to sign on their property with someone that's hoarding them and constantly calling them, give me your property. That's not the way to sell. So you're not only dealing with one nationality when you're dealing with the owners. You're not only dealing with one culture. You're dealing with so many different cultures.
Imagine AI being able to replicate that exact human conversation level. I feel like it will eventually replace majority of customer service when it becomes that level.
I think automation can work. There's a level of automation that's acceptable in hospitality.
How do you stand out when you have so many people with competition coming into this industry? All right, we're here with another episode in Dubai Catch Podcast, and I have a special guest here. He's a really young, passionate entrepreneur who just recently, you know, he lived his whole life here, but he's been also all over the world, and I'm sure he's going to add a lot of value to the audience listening.
First of all, thank you, Hamid, for having me. I'm Faisal Al-Ashqar, born and raised in Dubai, and we recently set up an Airbnb company or property management company in Dubai. And we've been operating for the past 5 years in Bali and Budapest in Hungary. My professional background is in law, completely different to what I'm doing right now.
Interesting combination, law of being a lawyer and at the same time starting a real estate.
But to be honest, look, it works well because through your work as a lawyer, you build certain trust with people, with your clients, with your counterparts. And I think it's a very transferable skill when you're dealing with property owners because, you know, property owners don't hand over...
Everything has to be done with the law. You know, when it comes to contract agreements and everything,
yeah.
I think your knowledge is very powerful.
Yeah, and I appreciate that because there's a misconception about lawyers. They kind of just make things difficult for people, you know, ask questions, negotiate, and argue. Whereas depending on the skills that you build and the details that you kind of upskill within yourself, you can definitely turn that into attention to detail, good negotiation tactics where it's to the benefit of your client, the property owner, and your company at the same time, as well as with the guests. So you can always end up finding that middle ground where you're good with communication, good with your time skills, good with your regulation, understanding of the legal landscape of things. I think it's extremely important.
For sure.
Yeah.
So what usually, like, from a lawyer, inspired you to get into property management and especially Airbnb?
Yeah, look, the way it started was odd, you know, not the most conventional way to start a business. But I was on vacation in Bali in 2019, and I met up with an old friend from university. He permanently moved to Bali, and he found a niche in Bali. At that time, the whole co-hosting, revenue sharing, subleasing business or Airbnb hosting wasn't as popular as it is today. I can tell you that at that time it was mainly hotel stays. So he suggested the whole business model, and I wasn't familiar with it at all. I had no idea. I didn't know anything about co-hosting, Airbnb businesses, subleasing. I didn't know anything.
So the knowledge was with him.
So the knowledge was with him, and he was also studying the market at that time. He had a two-bedroom villa in Bali that he took out a 2-year, 3-year lease on, and he just said, you know, I'm going to try to do it on my own in my personal capacity, and let's see where it takes us. So he pitched the idea of, how about you take a villa right next to mine, and then I can manage both of them, and then we can try to see how we can scale the business. And I kind of dismissed it. I didn't think too much of it. You know, I'm in law. You know, it's a professional career. You spend so much of your time. And at that time, I was doing legal consulting at one of the big four companies.
Where were you working?
I was at PwC Legal. So when I was there, I was too busy. And at some point, you know, sitting in your corporate job, doing corporate things, you know, for lack of a better term, you realize, okay, look, I can probably juggle a few things here whilst maintaining the level and standard of work that you put out. And I started studying it. I took some time to study it. It took me a few weeks to study it and actually understand the business model. And I picked up the phone, called him, and told him, look, let's start it. His name's David. He's hoping to visit Dubai soon, so he can...
He has never been to Dubai yet.
Never been to Dubai. None of my partners have, and I'll get to how the whole partnership happened. So I spoke to him. He told me there's this property. It's a two-bedroom villa, a beautiful pool, beautiful garden, you know, a typical Bali-style villas, open layout. I was like, okay, let's do it. We took out a two-year lease on that property, and he started managing it. And I was looking over the, you know, commercial, legal, regulatory aspect of things and pricing approaches, as well as business development, trying to bring on more people to kind of take on leases so we can manage for them. And it was basically like bringing investment to Bali, right? Because people want to put on long-term investments over there.
Well, this was all happening in 2019?
2019.
Just before COVID.
Right before COVID. And I'm going to get
to that. You paid for a two-year lease, so wow.
Exactly. We're going to get to that. It's an interesting story. So we did that. It was a lucrative opportunity. We enjoyed it and it was fun. There was a lot of learning. You know, two fresh out of university kids trying to figure out how to operate an Airbnb business or a subleasing business. So subleasing, for those that don't know the difference between subleasing and co-hosting or revenue sharing models, subleasing is where you take on a lease from the owner for 1 to 2 years, 3 years, and you pay up the rent. And then you kind of flip it on Airbnb or any of the other travel platforms, booking platforms.
But you paid it upfront for the 2 years.
Yes, you pay it upfront. Most of the time, if you're subleasing, the owner is going to tell you, I want it upfront. You're going to have to pay it in one check, two checks, or direct bank deposit. And we did that. You know, at that time, it wasn't as expensive as it is now.
In Bali?
In Bali, okay. For sure, for sure. So we did that and we started growing. People started signing on properties. We started managing those properties. And then March 2020 came, where COVID hit and Bali was extremely affected. So for those of the people that don't know, Bali is predominantly reliant on tourism. It's almost its entire population is there to host tourists, to show tourists around. So you have the tour guides, you have the hotels, you have the restaurants, the coffee shops, the beaches, everything is focused around tourism and people are making money through tourism. Their income is coming through tourists. So Bali was shut down for an extended period, way longer than the privilege that we had in Dubai. They closed up from 2020 March and opened up in January 2022. So 2 years, almost 2 years. So obviously the people that were in Bali at that time got stuck in Bali. So they stayed around on all the Airbnbs. They tried almost all their
Airbnbs. Oh, so it was almost like a leverage for you that they, because they were stuck there, now they were forced to pay for the Airbnb.
Yeah, but you know, they could have stayed in hotels at the same time, but because of the COVID, there were some restrictions. People preferred their private properties.
Mm.
Obviously the nightly rates were way cheaper than the normal seasonal prices. But it was good. At least you were covering some costs. And at that period, we met with a comparable company that had around the same amount of properties that we were managing at the time, and we decided to partner with them. We had to kind of adapt to the times. At that time, we kind of needed to leverage both networks. We need to leverage both internal infrastructure, software usage, know-how. So we just wanted to kind of share and grow. And we managed to unorganically double our portfolio, right? Because we merged with two partners, Benson Odon. And at that point, we just kept on grinding and grinding and grinding. And then at some point, we landed a very beautiful villa. An owner handed over his villa to us. So that's when we started shifting towards the co-host model, the revenue share model, where we take on an owner's property and manage it for them for a property management fee.
Without paying the rent.
Without paying the rent. So it's less capital intensive, so you're taking on less risk for sure. And then from that property, it was like it's called Villa Kirana. We still actually have it in our portfolio. And that property kind of blew us up. We managed it in a great way. We took care of the owner and we kind of showed him what we can do when we really put our time into it. And through word of mouth, organic marketing, he told all his friends, his network, and people started handing over their properties to us. And that's when we kind of pushed out of that COVID slump that pushed us to the next level, where we started really growing at a pace that was ahead of us. We didn't anticipate that growth. So that's the point where we realized this is a legit company. This is a venture that we really want to capitalize on. And we did. We're here now and we've expanded to Budapest. And now, most recently in Dubai, we set up in the 1st of August.
How many properties are you managing so far?
So in Bali, we have around 57 properties under management, mostly villas and a couple of penthouses. And in Hungary, we have 33 properties. And in Dubai, we started 1st of August, and we have two properties with a few in the pipeline that we're just finalizing last things so we can start listing them. Wonderful. Yeah.
What do you enjoy the most about working in this compared to being in the law firm or being with consulting firm and being in the property short-term rental market, you would say?
Yeah. They're so different, Hamid. I don't know how else to put it for you. When you're in the professional services field, like consulting, legal services, you're a lawyer, you're behind a desk, behind a computer, going to meetings, reviewing documents, getting on calls. It's very time intensive where every word is calculated against you. You know what I mean? Your client. So when you're a lawyer, a client doesn't come to you to catch up. You know, no one likes lawyers, if we're very honest with it. No one likes lawyers. No client calls you when they just to catch up. So client calls you when he really needs something, whether it's good or bad. And either way, there's urgency behind it.
That's usually it's bad.
Usually it's bad, yeah. And even when it's good, the time constraints and the pressure on the client just makes it extremely difficult from that perspective. So time pressures make it more difficult, even if it's an outcome that's beneficial to the person. So that's the only similarity between short-term rentals, like property management and professional services, I'd say. Everything is time intensive. So let's say an owner hands over a property to you. The second the owner hands over that property to you, he thinks tomorrow you list it on Airbnb, it's ready, it's live, it's getting booked, it's getting reviews, it's getting traction. That's not the case.
How long does it take?
Depending on property to property, if the property is ready, fully furnished, fully accommodated based on the applicable regulations in the UAE, it takes anywhere between 4 to 7 days, you know, just to make sure that I don't like rushing things. We try to rush them as much as possible, but we don't sacrifice on quality. We'd rather quality over quantity because that's what gets you to the next stage, right?
That makes sure you stand out from the most and ensure that you give the customer service that they need.
Absolutely. Because people, there's a big misconception about Airbnb hosting, whether it's subleasing or it's co-hosting and revenue sharing. It's not necessarily the real estate. You're not working in the real estate industry. You're closer to the hospitality industry because you're inviting guests, you're taking care of guests, you're making sure that their stay is close to or not more, or if not more than a 5-star hotel because they have all the amenities around them. And from that perspective, it's just very different. Like if you're subleasing, there is an element of real estate because you're trying to beat their long-term leases from that perspective. If you're putting in your investment, your initial investment, and all you care about at that point is beating that long-term value, that rent that you've already paid to that owner.
That you'll beat the market price. Exactly. Usually the market year is about, for example, this amount of price. You're trying to get beyond that and have a profitable, you know, sustainable income coming from this real estate.
Exactly. And that's similar to the revenue share model because the owner, you want to make sure that you pay back the owner more than his long-term lease.
For sure.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what value he would see from this?
Yeah. Absolutely.
If he was getting the same thing, he might as well just do it by himself.
Exactly. Exactly.
And for this, I would imagine you're still working as a full-time job.
Yeah.
As a lawyer.
Yeah.
How do you manage that between this and the business and your personal lifestyle?
I think it's consistency and discipline. You have so many hours in the day. You know, you have 24 hours in the day. And if you were just able to manage your time appropriately, you can get a lot done. You realize when you start scheduling things and you start dedicating or blocking time out of your calendar, you can do way more than you'd expect. I'm personally not of the view that, and I don't think that Dubai's landscape or its culture makes you stick to that full-time job. Obviously, Dubai is very fast-paced. You know, everyone listening to this podcast is probably thinking, I work all the time. I don't have time to do these things. But you have to also look at the other side of the coin. You have a very business-friendly environment here. You can set up a company very easily. There's a lot of competition, but competition breeds better companies and better products, right? You have to make sure that what you offer is better than your competitors. And from that perspective, going back to discipline and consistency, day in, day out, get a few hours in. If not a few hours, get a few minutes in. You'll find yourself taking big leaps over the longer term.
So how many hours would you say you're spending other than your typical job How many hours are you spending on just managing those real estate apartments right here?
You know, I have the benefit of working with great partners. All of us kind of divide and conquer the work that we have. Like right now, my Bali partner is focusing on Bali. And right now we're looking at taking that company to the next stage. In Hungary, we're looking at taking that company to the next stage as well. And we have a partner that sits in Budapest as well. And in Dubai right now, it's the most exciting time for us, right? We've just set up. We're still building a name for ourselves in the market. And we're going out, getting into meetings and checking out properties and trying to really make sure that we can provide the same service that we provide globally. And I don't think it would be that difficult, especially with the plethora of offerings that you have in Dubai, the service providers here. And there's a lot of competition. So each you can pit them against each other and get them to give you the best prices and the best time responses. And I think that's the best thing about like a capitalist economy as well. Which,
when it comes to this type of business, do you feel there is just one specific approach toward doing it, no matter which country you are? Like, would you defer that Dubai is different than Bali when it comes to managing property?
I would say every country is very different because you have to keep in mind the type of guests that you're expecting, the type of owners that you're dealing with.
How would that change the approach?
So if we look at Dubai, for example, right? A lot of the guests that come here are expecting to come to a more luxury stay. They're expecting to come and see five stars all around, whether it's a restaurant, coffee shop, their accommodation, their taxi, Uber drivers, you know, from everything. The second you walk into the airport, you land at the airport and you walk out, you realize that, okay, this is a different level here. Everything is just five stars. So from that aspect, you do see that through guests here. Whereas like if we compare that aspect, guests with Bali, Bali is way more laid back. Bali, you can wear swimming shorts and flip-flops the entire day and go to a five-star restaurant in flip-flops and swimming shorts. No one's going to tell you that's not in the dress code. So you see that. And then owners in Bali, for example, are very reserved and taken, like they put themselves away from the situation. You know, in Asia, sometimes, for example, generating income through your properties that you don't use can be considered as a taboo. I think it's very similar to India, for example. The wealthy don't want to let strangers into their house. Culturally, it's not something that
accepted.
Exactly. And then in Dubai, you have a lot more of a foreign and more diverse investor profile.
And very touristic city.
Exactly. So you have the best of both worlds. So you're not only dealing with one nationality when you're dealing with the owners. You're not only dealing with one culture. You're dealing with so many different cultures, and you kind of have to just, you know, off the cuff, deal with the person depending on his background, his culture, his expectations as well. And I think that's very different in Dubai. I wouldn't be able to tell you too much about Budapest because our partner that sits there focuses on Budapest primarily. And we've only recently acquired that company in Budapest a year ago. So we're still learning the ropes in Budapest, but we still have the same CEO sitting in Budapest for the near long-term future. And we'll see how we can grow that company over there as well.
So why did you choose Dubai as the next target, as the next place? Why not just New York City or Los Angeles or somewhere else in the world, in Canada?
That's actually a great question because I think there's a misconception about short-term rentals in Dubai. First of all, you mentioned New York. New York's regulations when it comes to short-term stays is extremely strict. There are very strict, let's say, requirements for an operator. And I don't even think it's a viable business opportunity there. If I'm not mistaken, I think you can only lease out a property if you live in that property. So you can lease out a room in your property. So you have to be physically present in your property.
So you can't sublease it?
Not sublease entirely, no.
Interesting.
I might be mistaken about that aspect, if the subleasing aspect, but I'm pretty sure that New York has some of the strictest regulations. And probably most, you've mentioned Singapore, same thing in Singapore as well, very strict regulations over there. Amsterdam, very strict regulations over there. I'm talking about tourist hubs in different aspects, in different areas. London is probably one of the better places, and London is something that we have our eye on because it's a flourishing market over there. There are certain regulations, but we're studying it over there as well. So going back to Dubai, you actually have a dedicated government authority or agency that looks after short-term rentals. So very not so recently, let's say in 2020 or a bit earlier than 2020, actually, you had a new regulation come out, supported by the government, that allows for short-term rentals and sets out very specific regulations that you must comply with. So anyone leasing a short-term rental needs to obtain a permit from the Dubai Tourism and Commerce.
Cool.
You need to obtain permits for the guests that are coming in. Every guest that comes in is going to have to get a permit through the, for example, if your apartment is in a Damac building, you have to go through the Damac Living app and apply for that permit. So it's very regulated. It can get a bit bureaucratic, but once you get that operational, your standard operational procedures in place, it gets so easy. You know, everything's online. You don't have to go anywhere to do anything. And because of the pickup in the business here, the big developers, the big receptionists in the buildings completely understand. They know what's going on, and they're very hospitable to the guests. So that's one. You have clear regulations, and we know the direction that this sector is going to take in Dubai. Second is that property investment in Dubai is going crazy. Everyone wants to invest in a piece of property in Dubai. You have your ready-made, you have your off-plan, you have your huge developments that are never-ending. People, and a lot of the people that invest in property here, don't necessarily live in those properties. They want to kind of generate income from it. They want to see how they can leverage that. And short-term rental is the best way because you don't get stuck with a long-term tenant.
Yes.
You know?
Long-term, there's a very strict policy in trying to remove a tenant as well.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, tenants have great rights here. That's not a bad thing. That's an amazing thing to have because you want the people that come to Dubai to feel comfortable in the place that they're living in. You don't want...
And not get kicked out at any time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So it's very strict here. So people that are buying investment properties sometimes might want to sell. Yeah. Under the Dubai Land Department regulations, you can evict a tenant if you're going to sell, but there's certain time periods and regulatory obligations that you have to maintain, which can get difficult, you know, if you're managing something. Whereas when you're dealing with a property manager like us, for example, at B&B Mates, we are very accommodating to the property investors because a lot of the times the property investors don't just have one unit or one property. They have multiple. And if you can gain that trust with one property, they can give you their other properties or even they can spread your company's name across their network.
Now, I've been hearing about this for quite some time, about the subleasing community, about people managing Airbnbs and doing Booking.com, you name it, those short-term rental. How do you stand out when you have so many people with competition coming into this industry? How do you as a business person stand out from this?
That's a great point, Hamid, actually, because it is, a lot of people say that it's becoming a saturated market in Dubai and generally the UAE as well. I think standing out is just the relationships you can build with your owners, with the owners that trust in you and give you their properties. Obviously, it's also a track record that you need to build. You need to build a good track record. You need to be able to confidently sit in front of a property owner and tell them, I can guarantee you. Well, guarantee is a big word because you never know in the market, right? But you can try or aim for 25-35% over a long-term tenant's lease.
Hmm.
That's after expenses. That's after everything. So it becomes more of a lucrative aspect. And you just have to learn how to market yourself in a specific way. You actually have to, a lot of the time, you're educating the owners as well because some of them look at short-term rental as, you're going to be getting parties and people are going to damage my property and ruin my furniture. That's actually really not the case. You have to actually let them know that, look, we are owners just like how you want your property to stay in good condition. We want that even more. You know, we want to make sure that your property stays in impeccable five-star condition. Every time an owner checks in and checks out, we inspect the property. We look at the walls. If there's a scratch on the wall, we get our maintenance team to touch up the walls. We see an issue if there's someone smoking in the property, we report that to certain insurance coverages by Airbnb, Air Insure. And then we try to make sure that that property stays that, when we hand it over to you, it's going to be in perfect condition. So that's one aspect. I think it's difficult to stand out. I'll tell you that. I'll be very honest and transparent with you because there is just so many properties on Airbnb right now. I think there's around 25,000 listings on Airbnb.
Here in Dubai?
Yeah, somewhere around that. I was reading an article the other day. You know, it's a very fragmented market here. You don't have like 2-3 players that manage most of the properties. It's dispersed. So you have some of the big operators that own 700 plus units. You have some of the smaller operators that own 20 units, 10 units, 5 units. Some of them do it in their personal capacity. So from that perspective, it's very fragmented. And obviously, at some point, you can start seeing a shift towards that in the market, which we can maybe are probably actually seeing that a bit more now. But yeah, I'm not going to lie to you and tell you we stand out because of X, Y, Z. Anyone that tells you that is not looking at the market accurately. Because when you genuinely do look at the market, you see that there are amazing hosts in Dubai. People understand the value that comes behind Dubai. People understand that the guests want the best stay that they can actually stay in. A lot of the time, some of these Airbnbs are actually better than hotels, better than five-star hotels. You'd be so surprised. You know,
sure, in terms of size, if you think about it even, like when it comes to hotels, I find their size is very small. And for the same price, you might be able to get the double the size of the regular hotel room. So, and at the same time, you get the kitchen, you get the spacious, you know, living room, and then you have the bedroom as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes if you're going in groups, people like to stay closer. You know, you get a 2-bedroom, 3-bedroom, you guys can all stay in the same place and you build better memories, nicer memories, because you're not taking your keyless card into room 104, you know, and then the other one going to 105, and then you just split the night. It's very different. You know, some people prefer the hotels. You know, they go in and they barely spend time in their accommodation, and they go to different places and they want a tour. So I think different approaches for different people. I wouldn't say one size fits all.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
So when it comes to strategies, what kind of strategies you do to ensure that you guarantee the owner and you guarantee that there's an occupancy rate? Because this is all based on what the customers want. So how do you as a company ensure that you will fulfill whatever the owner wants?
So I think it starts in the beginning of your relationship with that owner. So the way it usually works is an owner has an investment property that's vacant, and they'll come to you until, you know, they reach out to multiple holiday home providers and then be like, I'm interested in your services. What can you offer? The first thing that you do, you kind of create like a rent forecast for that property.
Mm.
You look at comparable properties around. You look at the long-term leases. You try to give an average, you know, like a low average, medium occupancy, high occupancy. So you give the owner a realistic expectation. Don't tell him, I'm getting 100% your return. That's not true. And most of the owners don't fall for it anyway. And they're just going to go to someone that's more reliable and more transparent.
Hmm.
So we start off with a rent forecast for the entire year. And we give them averages. We give them, you know, based on this occupancy, we can expect this much. Based on that occupancy, you can expect that much. And our booking rates will vary between X and Y. And so the relationship starts from there.
You give them the data.
Exactly. You give them the data. And then they're going to sit down and consider it. Like, you know, does this make sense for me?
It's like a business plan in a way.
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So it starts from there. The strategy starts from day one. And as you go, communication is the best technology, the best source of, you know, people management. So you have to keep your owner informed throughout the entire year. You want to tell him, look, the property didn't do that well this month. You know, it's June, it's the summer. A lot of times you don't have to explain because owners understand. And you kind of need to start looking at the property's general performance throughout the year. So a lot of the times if you sign early on in the year, it's going to look great because you're January, February, March, April, weather's still good in Dubai, tourism's still high in Dubai. So you generally get most of your income between, let's say, October till May or April, if we're realistic, October till April. So you want to see how that property performed in that period. If you feel like you're starting to reach that long-term lease comparison, you're going to start probably dropping your prices a bit over the summer period, giving longer stays, applying discounts. So there's so many different strategies you can apply. But I think it's a lot of looking at data and really trying to understand where are we now and where do we need to get to. You know, if you're so far off your year lease comparison, you know, you have to start communicating to your owner, look, this property didn't do as well as we expected. We're going to try a few new things, maybe try for a bit of a longer term stay, like a 2-3 week period. So you're going to have to potentially look at certain strategies that follow that suit, you know.
In terms of technologies, you mentioned about technologies, you know, helping a little bit more and making your life a little bit easier.
Yeah.
Can you maybe name some of those tools or technologies that you think will be really added value to people listening today?
So there are so many tools. There are so many tools. It's blown up in the past few years, if I'm being honest. You have pricing tools, you know, Price Labs. Everyone knows about Price Lab in the field. You have AirDNA, which kind of gives you like a rough estimate on where you're at with your property and how much you should lease it out for and your nightly stays, and looks at the comparison between that same place that you're staying in, that where your property is located. And then this is probably controversial because a lot of people automate their responses to guests.
Mm.
Okay. I'm kind of against that. I think it's not the best way to do it because people want a more personable approach. You know, with the boom of AI and boom of, you know, the ChatGPTs and the different automated platforms that just give you amazing real life answers, like it's a human speaking to you. I think that doesn't work in hospitality. Owners actually want to speak to a person a lot of the times. It gets more difficult when you're managing, you know, 50 plus properties because you have 50 plus guests at any given time that are expecting a response from you. So we try to automate as least as possible when it comes to guest communication. I know a lot of people prefer automated guest communication, but I'm not a huge fan of it. And I think a lot of the big operators also understand the value add from having more personable, real answers when you're talking to your guests.
But don't you think that AI is becoming so good at replicating that humane, natural conversation that is happening?
Look, like, you know,
I mean, like, imagine if, like, usually when, as a human being, when you are talking to a person, you have a little bit of pauses, you'll have a little bit of using some words. Imagine AI being able to replicate that exact human conversation level. I feel like it will eventually replace majority of customer service when it becomes that level. Even now, they're using, if you press one, if you want to go this, press two, that is a little bit annoying, even for myself.
Yeah.
I get annoyed by this. And I feel much more connected to the business when I feel that I'm talking to a real person. But I feel AI is actually going that way, in a way that I've seen with Google, I think, and other people, where an AI can be your personal assistant, call another, maybe restaurant or somewhere else, on your behalf, and use exact human-level tone to answer and respond to that person.
Look, I think ChatGPT is almost there. You know, ChatGPT 4.0 is there. You know, I think it's past the Turing test. It's clear. It can fool some people that you're actually speaking to a real human being.
I'm sure it's available, but people are cautious. Those companies are cautious about releasing it.
Yeah.
It's there. It's available. It's just that what kind of potential harm it can cause this. Imagine nowadays they can replicate your voice and may use you on behalf of that company to call some bank or something and pretend that it's to be you.
Especially someone like you that hosts podcasts, right? There's a lot of voice recordings of you on.
Yeah.
And there are so many of those fake videos that go out of someone actually have a full-on conversation that conversation never actually happened.
Mm.
It sounds real. I've fallen for so many of them.
But the voice of famous actors as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I don't know. So there was this clip of Joe Rogan going around speaking, saying things that you couldn't believe you were hearing, but it sounds like a real human. And it's just crazy where technology is going these days. And I think technology is there. You know, I think automation can work. But I'd probably say, like, there's a level of automation that's acceptable in hospitality, but not an entirely automated response profile that you just, a guest can never speak to a person, or it's pretty difficult to get to speak to a person. You know, sometimes when you're calling a bank or one of these, like, huge conglomerates, it's good luck getting to a person. Press one and then press two, press hash, wait for 15 minutes, and then you're to another robot. So I don't know. I think in the hospitality industry, it needs a bit of time, at least for people to really start accepting that approach.
So especially for the older generation. Right now, you have real people answering people.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So we have, like, prepared messages, for example. Like, if we have a guest coming to stay at any of our properties, we have an automated message which tells them, these are the amenities, these are how you can access these things, your parking is located here, if you want to get here, take a first right. You know what I mean?
So it tells you. Is this an Airbnb app, or is it through their emails that you're sending this automated
message? So on Airbnb, each listing has, like, details. Airbnb is actually great at that. You can put almost all your information up front on each listing. So the guest kind of gets an entire understanding of the property before he even checks in. But you also have personalized messages that go out to the guests, you know, like, for example, let's say during the guest stay, something's off with the air conditioning or something is wrong with any of the amenities or utilities in the house. The last thing that guest is going to want to do is talk to a robot or want to get an automated message. That's a sure way of getting one star review on any of your property listings. And you don't want that. You want to actually talk to them, show some empathy, tell them that you understand that this has caused them some delays or it caused them some, you know, it was annoying or frustrating. We're going to get right to you as soon as possible.
So is it like a phone number on the apartment that they call?
So a lot of the times, for example, it's through WhatsApp. Guests sometimes don't prefer speaking on the phone. They want to text you and they want to get responses from you. If something's urgent, they can call you at any time, of course. So especially for us, we're always available. Like the leverage that we have.
24/7?
24/8, if you'd like that. Because we operate in Dubai, Bali, Budapest, different time zones. Our customer relationship management is down in Bali, so we leverage that. We kind of utilize all our resources across. And we obviously have some people on the ground here that understand the country, the city, the location specifically, that can actually advise you on what's best. You know, sometimes guests can ask, I want to, let's say, go to a restaurant. Can you book it for me? Of course, we can book it for you. Never say no. You're in the hospitality business. We need an extra duvet. Sure, we'll send it.
So kind of like a concierge service.
Yeah, exactly. We basically operate a concierge service. I'm even partnering with a friend of mine that has a concierge service in Dubai. He started 2-3 years ago. Shout out to Exposure. Exposure is a great platform that can help you from your nightlife to your desert tourism to your car bookings to your... So everything. They help. It's like an end-to-end concierge service. And we use that for our guests too. We pick them up from the airports if they'd like. We drop them off. We have a driver that can stay with them the entire day if they'd like that. There's nothing that you can't offer in Dubai. There's genuinely very little that you can't offer in Dubai.
Now, I'm going to go with a quote that I'm going to share with you.
Okay.
And then you tell me what's your thoughts.
Sure.
So I'll read it out. Real estate cannot be stolen or lost, nor can it be carried away. Purchased with common sense, paid for in full, and managed with reasonable care. It is about the safest investment in the world. Franklin D. Roosevelt. He was a U.S. president.
Yeah, great quote. Great quote. It's funny that he's the one that said that Franklin Roosevelt was the one that even, he was the president that kind of started removing the U.S. dollar from the gold standard. He started with a few executive orders. Look, property investment is pretty important. It's somewhere for you to live, somewhere for you to create some sort of income, whether it's long term or short term. You can leverage your properties. So, for example, you can take a mortgage to buy property. Banks are comfortable with that because banks know and understand real estate. You can even reverse mortgage. If you have a property, you can reverse mortgage it with the bank and get cash to invest further in property so you can scale and compound. I personally look at property as in everyone needs a piece of property. Everyone needs a piece of land. Everyone needs a place to feel like it's their home. It's somewhere that they can resort to and sit in. I think the biggest thing about property is the fact that it's a tangible asset. Very little today is actually a tangible asset. Most people that even own gold don't actually own the gold in their own house. It's sitting in a vault in somewhere that's controlled by someone else. Very close to Bitcoin, right? Bitcoin is...
it's a virtual asset.
Exactly. It's a virtual asset. You have a piece of real estate on the blockchain. So look, I think no one investment is the best investment. I think diversify. Make sure that you have hedges. You know, hedge against as much as you can. You know, diversify your portfolio. Look at stocks. Look at real estate. Look at up-and-coming emerging technology. Like Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, study anything you get into needs to be studied. Don't jump into anything without studying it. Real estate can be the worst investment in your life if you didn't study the property before you buy it. You buy a property with excessive mold, you're going to spend so much money fixing that house up and redoing the entire place. So do your own research before you invest in anything. Absolutely. So people kind of need to understand. So a lot of people try to scale too quick. So, okay, let me start from scaling, actually, because scaling too quick can actually be to your detriment. If you don't, because we experienced that in Bali. We, at some point when I was mentioning Villa Kirana, when the word went out and owners started handing properties over to us, we started accepting properties because we thought that it was a good thing. You know, growing a company is a great thing. And of course, growing a company is a good thing. But growing a company is a good thing when you're ready for it, when you have the resources, when you have your standard operating procedures in place, when you actually know what you're doing. We jumped from 33 properties to 56 properties within a few months. That's not easy to manage, you know.
Was it a good idea?
It was a great idea it was a great idea now. At the time, it was a horrible idea. Because we were running around trying to find talent, trying to scale the business as much as we can while we've already taken on responsibility. So I think the biggest issue in Dubai is you see a lot of people scaling for the sake of scaling. You're just growing because you want to grow and you want to be the biggest operator in Dubai. You're not going to get to the biggest operator in Dubai if you just put your head down, keep growing and growing and growing. Grow and take pauses. Try to refine your operation. Try to refine your service. Try to refine your offering to your guests and your owners. Try to refine your internal systems. Don't you know, close your eyes and just say yes, yes, yes to everything. Sometimes saying no is not a bad idea, especially on a growth and scale perspective.
So what you're saying is basically you have to ensure that you take your time to enhance the services that you're providing. And not trying to scale as soon as possible just to get the most profit and the most money.
Exactly.
Because sometimes that can be your downfall.
Exactly. Because if you look at our industry, you know, the short-term rental industry, property management industry, it's very labor-intensive. It's not a tech platform, you know. If you've set up a SaaS, sell that SaaS and it just keeps selling itself and you're selling it, of course, you're going to have some development on the back end. But from our perspective, it's not, you can't gamble with people's properties. You can't gamble with people's expectations. You know, you have to have a calculated approach to everything. Depending on your sector, you know, tech people might be listening to this and be like, this guy has no idea what he's saying. But when it comes to property, I feel like we've nailed it at this point. Because for some time in Bali, we stopped taking on new properties. We said, let's pause here at around 55. Let's pause here and let's just refine our offering. And then once we were ready, we opened up again and we organically generated all those new properties coming in a healthy way.
So when new property owners come to you, you decline them respectively?
We decline them or we refer them to other companies that we trust.
Really?
Yeah.
So you basically redirect them to your competitors?
Absolutely. Because it's such a small industry. You know, everyone knows each other. Even in Dubai, you'd be surprised. I've been operating here for almost just over a month. And I've met so many people in the short-term rental industry because there's so much information. Everyone wants to leverage information. Information is gold at this stage. And it's a very... Because, you know, if you meet someone in subleasing, he's not interested in owner's properties. You know, he's interested in taking on his own properties and leasing those on Airbnb. So he gets owners approaching him. He'd be like, I know someone that can trust you. And obviously, there's arrangements between each other. So people take commissions, people take referrals, kickbacks, things like that. It's just the nature of the game.
Well, then again, you're adding value to the property owner.
Exactly.
That's the most important thing.
Exactly.
So even if you can't afford that value, you might as well do it through a friend, but you take your commission at the same time, he's adding value to that property owner.
Exactly. You're not going to refer an owner to an operator that you don't trust. There's just no way you'll do that. You're better off telling the owner, sorry, we just can't do it right now.
Sure.
Yeah.
So looking ahead, where do you see the short-term rental market going, especially here in Dubai?
So I think in Dubai, people are going to stop coming to set up in Dubai, I think, because right now the market is getting saturated. I think you're going to start seeing consolidation over at the top. The bigger players might start taking over a higher percentage of the market share, which is expected, because you have some players that, like I said, own 700, 500, 400 properties. So I honestly think that over time, we're going to start seeing the market here mature and the people that have been here and are operating in a sensible way will continue. You're going to see a few operators go bust sooner or later, especially the subleasing guys that come here and don't manage their cash flow properly, and they experience the summer and then realize, what have I done? I didn't manage my winter revenue. I didn't manage my expenditure. I don't have money to pay my next check, which is the reality.
Then they probably start selling courses.
Start selling get-rich-quick schemes.
Yes.
You know, yeah, that's actually very
true. That's what happens usually. Like, usually if they try to feel a way to scale, they say, okay, I'm doing this property, might as well sell this knowledge and get money from it to just sustain themselves. And
exactly. These online courses, look, there's a place for them. If you're getting it from a legitimate company that operates as a course provider, but anyone that's doing this course on the side has set up a Canva brochure that can cover all the aspects, and he gets on a call with you once a month and sells you a dream, but without giving you the actual secrets. He's basically competing with you at some point. So I don't, you know, I think there's a huge conflict of interest there. And I personally wouldn't trust these courses. I'd be better off doing what I did. Me and David did. We took on two properties and scratched our heads for a couple of months, try to figure out what we're doing. That's the best way to learn, trial and error.
So just go ahead into the market and try it out.
Yeah.
See if it's for you.
Look at your investment appetite. Yeah. Like, look at your bank account. Look at your monthly income, monthly expenditures. Can you afford this? If it goes completely wrong, are you going to be struggling to pay your rent or pay your mortgage or pay your whatever it is? No, calculate before you go in. But if you're taking a calculated risk, a lot of the times you're going to feel more comfortable approaching a venture. If you're putting all your money in it, you're going to get stressed. You're going to start pushing. You're going to be aggressive in your sales. You're just going to be, you know, pushing people to sign on. And no one's going to want to sign on their property with someone that's hoarding them and constantly calling them, give me your property. That's not the way to sell.
Sure. It's like, let the clients themselves come to you because they trust and they've seen your value in the market.
Exactly.
And through the word of mouth, through other people's, through the service you provided to the customers, clients will eventually come.
Absolutely. And there's another misconception I'd probably say is, a lot of the times owners come and say, oh yeah, your property management fee is 20%, but this guy's offering me 15%. I'll be like, okay, go with him. Go with him. Go with the 15%. And you're going to experience that 15% over the long term is going to be something that you're not interested in anymore. You're going to start seeing a weaker maintenance level in your property. So lower, they're not going to be investing as much time and effort in marketing, producing, for example, pictures, videos, reels, Instagram, social media, direct listings. None of that is going to be maintained because that operator is not motivated, you know? So from that perspective, a lot of the time, sometimes giving up more gives you back way more.
Less stress and headaches, I would say.
Exactly.
And worrying about what's going to happen. Are you going to reach the target that you're looking for or not?
Exactly.
Going to my last question. So for those who are property owners, for those who are looking to become, you know, short-term rental owners, let's say, how would they reach out to you?
So anyone that wants to reach out to us can reach out to us on Instagram.
What is it?
Our handle is BNBMatesDXB. You can reach out to us. You can contact us on... Probably the best way to do it is DM us. We can get on a call with you, meet with you. And our website's coming up soon. We've done an entire rebrand from day one from our previous brand. And our website should be up soon where you can directly send us your inquiry easily. And we'll get back to you as soon as possible.
Well, Faisal, it's a pleasure to have you here. And really, I think the audience learned so much more about the property short rental. It's about the short-term rental market right here in Dubai. I would say they learned a lot for sure. So thank you so much.
And thank you for having me. Absolutely. Thank you very much, Hamid.
Thank you.